Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead. It sounds like our music went into the breach.
Yeah, our sounds like our bagpipes died. Anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
And we're actually here right now. We're live.
Here? Can you prove that? That's the question. I think I'm alive. I just checked my pulse.
Wherever you go, there you are.
Okay.
It's a true statement, as far as I can tell, because I've never been anywhere that I wasn't.
I'm working on that. I think I've been a few places that I wasn't. I was last night, several places that I wasn't.
What, were you online?
I was in the past.
Oh, but you were there.
Well, I felt like I was there, but I really wasn't there because it was a dream. Anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and the Personal Wealth Coach is both an SEC-registered investment advisory firm that does wealth management for people who have wealth. Ha-ha! I like that. And that was my joke for the day,
yes,
ladies and gentlemen.
You laughed before anyone else knew it was a joke.
That's right. That's cool. Yeah, well, that, you know, it's because I'm geek. But I'm not quite certified. I'm looking for a certifiable source, you know, someplace that can certify. I mean, I am certifiable, though.
Yeah.
I think so. I think I qualify. Anyway, we are here to provide you with news, information, and opinion, I suppose, on things concerning the economy, the markets, investments, and things of that ilk. Telephone numbers to call in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we have a caller on 773-1400 who obviously was prescient.
He just knew that we were going to be on the air?
Well, whoever it is, they called before I gave the number out.
That's some form of precognition.
Yes.
Yeah,
no,
I think we should be on coast to coast at this point.
Effect before cause. Anyway, caller on 773-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, long-time listener, like the show, fully invested. I've really enjoyed the ride the stock market has been taking us lately. I have a two-part question, if I may.
All right. I don't know if we can remember that many parts, but we'll work on it.
I get lost in one-part questions.
Okay. Is the stock market, is the business economy really doing as good as the stock market reflects that it is? I mean, I know we're kind of an exception here in Texas and maybe some other parts of the nation, but there's still a lot of doom and gloom out there if you listen to the media.
Okay.
Second part is, I know that defined pension plans are pretty much dead. Everybody that is participating, their options are pretty much 401ks. And the managers of 401ks have to take this money that they're sent every week or every 2 weeks or every month, depending on how they get paid. Is the fact that they're having to invest this money artificially inflating the stock prices?
That's
I'll
a good
hang up and listen.
All right, thank
great,
you.
Great couple of questions.
Yeah, you must have been thinking or something.
All right, so let's start with the broad question.
The broad question,
and that's not a sexist statement.
It's not?
I'm talking about the scope, not about
so you're
gender.
So you're scoping out the broads.
Oh, dear. All right. Is the economy doing as well as the stock market thinks it does?
Stock market thinks?
That's the first thing that we can say. Wait a minute.
He said says.
Says it does.
Yeah.
Okay, says
stock market
it does.
Doesn't think, but it does say.
There are signs.
The stock market has spoken.
Okay.
Yes.
The economy is far more than recovered as far as the growth and output from the recession. There's no doubt of that. We measure that in all kinds of different ways. GDP is up above what it was at the top before the recession. So that's not in doubt. What has been in doubt is whether or not the stock market would recognize that. And one of the funny things, I find this quite humorous, when people in the media start talking about stock market breaking new records, and they say it like it is running faster in a race than anyone has ever run before, and that's the kind of record that it's breaking, or that it's somebody's running a marathon that is, or Ironman that's 300 miles long, or instead of 72 or 26 or whatever. The reality is that the stock market is trying to measure the movements in the publicly traded part of our economy. And the earnings have far more than recovered the value of the public part of the economy, the earning power of that public part of the economy has far more than recovered from 2008. The stock market is finally recognizing that. So it's recognized it all at once, which makes it look like there's this sudden shift in the economy. The economy has shifted and been moving very slowly in a growth-oriented fashion, and the stock market didn't recognize it for a long time. Well, now it all moved forward and said, okay, we're going to jump on board and recognize that the economy actually has recovered. So that's kind of a roundabout answer to say, yes, the economy is as good as the stock market thinks it is, only the stock market took a long time to recognize it. So it looks like it's happening all at once.
And I can, if I might add something to that.
Sure.
The issue is not that the stock market is indicating we have a fast-moving economy. It isn't.
No.
Let me say that it is a matter of time perspective. This is an important thing to understand. If you said you were a fully invested and long-time investor, long-time listener, it's important to understand something here. Investing, successful investing, and I'm saying this as if it's my idea and it's new. It's not.
Yes.
This actually goes back to at least publications in the 1930s that pioneered the concept of securities analysis. Matter of fact, the name of the book that was first written in was called Securities Analysis by Benjamin Graham.
It's kind of considered the Bible by people like Warren Buffett.
Right. And so... The issue in being a successful investor is having a longer investment time horizon than other investors. That's it in a nutshell. Because when people are saying the market is roaring upward, we should get in, or it is falling, we should get out, they're looking at very short periods of time. And it becomes, if you ever look in the media, the publications, the print publications even, it is very, very difficult to find long-term information. As a matter of fact, if you're going to get good long-term information, it's almost a necessity that you have to pay for it and you have to hunt for it.
You go to Wikipedia.
Well, even in Wikipedia, the information sometimes can be very stale and not long-term. But, for example, I pay for Morningstar every year. The Morningstar premium, pro, ultra, super, duper stuff. And the reason I do that is because it gives me a lot of good long-term information. For instance, when we look at a mutual fund, we typically look at 10 years and try to find 10 years of performance. And by the way, we look at 10 years of performance on the manager, not the fund, because if the manager has changed and the fund has been sold from one company to another, then it doesn't count. But even Morningstar limits how far back you can look, how long the view is. So why am I saying all this to do with what the stock market is saying about the economy? This is an important article. I think it was in, Barron's today. The stock market is not at a record. I want to say that again. In real terms, the S&P 500, Dow Jones Industrial Average have still not reached record highs.
Nope.
The reason I say that is in 2000, and I don't have the data right here in front of me, the actual numbers. The numbers that were hit in 2000 by the Dow and the S&P 500, if we adjust them for inflation, are higher than where the market is today. And yet, if you look at the gross domestic product of the United States, the earnings of the companies, again, adjusted for inflation, the gross domestic product is adjusted for inflation. You look at the earnings of the companies and you adjust them for inflation, you will discover that today's earnings are multiples, and I don't mean a percentage higher. They're literally multiples of what they were in 2000. I think it was in 2001 or after, it was after the collapse actually started. The price to earnings ratio on the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index hit 47. It was like 37 or 38 in 2000 at its top. The earnings fell faster than the market did. But it so it ultimately hit 47. So let's just say it was around 40. Let me
give a quick definition of price to earnings ratio. There are people out there that think price to earnings ratio is a complex thing. It's really
cereal.
Not. If you just take the amount of money that a company makes as earnings.
You take the price divided by the earnings.
And you divide it. Yeah. And basically, if you had a rental house and it was making you $100 a month and it was worth $1,000.
It's a 10 to 1.
Yeah. You've got 1,000 divided by 1. So it's
by
a
10.
Or by 10.
100.
Yeah, yeah. By 100. So that comes out to a 10 price to earnings ratio. That means that the rent from. Well, that's not exactly right. It really is a monthly thing. If it were every year,
it still
works.
It works out to the year, basically. Yeah. And by the way, in real estate, it's called a capitalization rate or ratio.
Yeah, cap rate.
And it works exactly the same way. But the bottom, you know, really the bottom line here is that the pre-tax earnings, meaning after all expenses, the profits prior to paying income taxes of a company or what we call its earnings. And if we look at the price, if we look at the Standard & Poor's 500 stock index as if it's one company.
Just said, what are the earnings of this big, huge conglomerate company?
We look at the earnings versus the stock price. And currently it's about 11.75 forward. This is what we call forward earnings, estimated earnings for next year. So if we look at that, it's about 11.75 today. And we look back at 2000. When the market was at a similar nominal height, but actually higher if we count for inflation.
Yeah.
And the price earnings ratio was around 40.
We
suddenly realized that what the stock market is saying is that it is finally recognizing the fact that over the last 13 years, the economy has grown a whole bunch.
Yeah. And so the correct answer to that question, with a lot of long-windedness, because that's what we like to do around here, is that the stock market hasn't quite recognized where it's supposed to be. It should be higher than it is. 11 as a price-to-earnings ratio is historically very low, which means that we're underpriced. And the stock market is recognizing it. We've had slow growth in the economy. So this isn't the stock market saying, hey, we're having high growth. It's the stock market saying, it's been 13 years, and we haven't recognized the growth that's happened.
In essence, the stock market is making a statement, and it is the collective statement of the people who buy.
Did it clear its throat first?
It certainly did last year. It dropped about 16%. The stock market is making a statement that, in the opinion of the shell-shocked investors who have seen two major 50% declines in the last little over a decade. In the opinion of those investors, the probability of another 50% decline is pretty low.
Yeah.
That's all they're saying.
Yeah.
And it is certainly not caught up to normal. When the forward price earnings ratio, meaning next year's estimated earnings, when the CEOs come on board and the analysts come on board and they say, here's how much we think a company will earn in the next year. That's what runs the price of the stock of the company, not last year's earnings.
No.
You don't buy something based on what it earned last year. You buy it based on what you think it'll earn next year or what you think the underlying assets are worth.
Yeah.
And
or some combination.
Yeah, and so the point is that the stock market is now saying that we probably are not going to have a major market crash in the near future. That's all it's saying. It's not saying that the economy is doing great. The economy is moving along very slowly, but the market's got a long ways to go before it catches up to where would be normal for this kind of economic growth.
Now, all of that was the first part of a two-part question. The second part is all these people contributing to their retirement funds, their 401ks, mm-hmm. their IRAs, all that stuff, and they're going into people's coffers who then
turn into their coffins?
Their coffins, yes. No, their coffers who then have to invest that money.
A person who is a cougher by definition
yes.
is coughing.
Yes, that's emphysema, I think, or something along those lines.
Okay, I was just checking.
They're coughing a lot. So the question was, is this artificially inflating the prices of stocks? And the answer is yes and no.
I love it. I'm
a great economist here. I can't give a clear answer to anything.
On the other hand,
how many hands do you have? Okay.
Well, that's where the Hindu gods came
right.
from.
Right. Yes, they're all economists. when one of those investment managers invests the money without regard to the underlying assets, if they just say, we're going to put it into an index, that has the effect of inflating some of those assets in the index. There's no doubt about that, artificially, because they're not saying, hey, this is a good company and that's a bad company. I'm only going to invest in the good company. Or this company is underpriced and that one's not. I'm only going to invest in the underpriced one. They're saying it's in an index. I'm going to put money in it. That's inflationary. That doesn't have anything to do with the actual value of the company or the reasoning why people would have invested in it in the past. However, if the managers are taking a rational look at investments when they invest, it has the opposite. It has the impact that it's supposed to have of bringing up undervalued investments. This is what we're supposed to be doing. If we look at an investment and we say, this investment is way below what it should be, the earnings are higher and it's doing great things, it's being managed well, we think it's a great company, and then you buy into it and it brings the price up. That's what is supposed to happen. So the yes and no is it depends on the 401k. It depends on the investment options in the 401k. If it's a place like CalPERS, I can almost give an unequivocal, and you notice I say almost because no economic
almost
statement can be unequivocal. No, there's a small hand. On the other hand, CalPERS.
You really should say an almost irrevocable, unequivocal.
There we go. Yes. CalPERS has an impact in the market that is quite inflationary because they do not invest based on profit. They invest based on social things in many, many cases.
No, use the economic term, social stuff.
Social stuff, yes. They'll come in and they'll say, this company creates firearms. We are not going to be involved in this company anymore. And so the firearm company, which is making record profits, says our stock price just went down because CalPERS sold out of us.
Which means that ultimately, by the way, the retirees in California are going to be in deep doo-doo.
Yes. When you manage, if you politically manage an investment portfolio, the results are going to be the same thing you get in politics, which is a lot of doo-doo.
There we go. I like that. You know, it happens.
It does. Doo-doo happens.
To answer your question, from my perspective, it's fairly simple. If you looking at charts and everything else, a massive stock market bubble occurred from about 1994 through into 2000, and then it was 2002 before it was done. That bubble and collapse, in my opinion, and I also think in the other Mr. McClure's opinion here, based on our research, came from a very simple issue. Massive speculative investment in a single asset, that asset being
the
variations of the S&P 500 index funds.
Yeah.
And John Bogle who is still worshipped as a demigod by a lot of people. They're called Bogleheads.
I had a Boglehead. Is that the same thing?
Yeah, they call those guys Bogleheads.
Bogleheads.
But he said, and I have the actual news articles where he was quoted word for word, based in the late 1990s, all an investor needs to retire successfully is an S&P 500 index fund. He said that. And, of course, shortly after he said that, the market, the S&P 500 started down. And as I said, today, 13 years later, after inflation, the S&P 500 is still not as high as it was when he said that. And he was wrong. But his beating the drum and the academics beating the drum that they did a statistical analysis and determined that management made no difference and that just buying into an index fund was the smartest thing to do. And the mythical 85% of all mutual funds are outperformed by the S&P 500. That is a false statement,
isn't.
By the way.
It is not.
No, today it is a false statement.
If you add in the bond funds... And
today, if you add in the bond funds, the
S&P 500 hasn't done that well.
No.
Yeah.
The bottom line to it is, I just looked at, for instance, I just looked at large cap equity funds. I looked at equity funds in general this morning in Morningstar. The Standard & Poor's 500 stock index is down about 38% from the bottom. It is in the 62nd percentile among equity mutual funds over the last 5 years. Now, that's not terribly bad. There are mutual funds that are worse. There's no question about that. But when you consider that the S&P 500 stock index is theoretical, holds no cash, all kinds of things that it has going for it, experiences the full volatility. When you consider that large cap funds out there that hold cash so that people can do redemptions, that pull some of the shocks out of the ups and downs, that the majority of them have outperformed the S&P 500 over the last 5 years or the last 10 years, that doesn't make the headlines because it doesn't fit what people think ought to be. I think there's a fundamental distaste for investment managers who make money by investing other people's money. Until we get to the hedge fund managers and then they become heroes. I don't get that one either, by the way. I had a guy wanted me to be a hedge fund manager last week.
Oh, yeah.
He wanted me to charge him based on the upside.
Yeah, well, it's very lucrative for the hedge fund managers. What's being shown is that in the downside, the hedge fund managers don't really lose much of their own income.
Right.
In the upside, they get to take a lot of the income from the investors.
For those who really...
It's not real nice.
And I've actually had people ask me, why don't you just... I just want to pay you a percentage when it's rising, and I don't want to pay you anything when it's falling. Okay, well, that's what hedge funds do. They do charge a little bit when it's falling. They've actually charged more than we do. But they typically take 20% of the upside. I mean,
that's a lot of money.
Plus their underlying management fee, they take 20% of the upside. By the way, regular investment advisors can't do that without it. Has to, only sophisticated investors, which means people with a whole bunch of money, can invest with hedge fund managers right now. And why? Well, because very frankly, the tendency to become overly aggressive by an investment manager is going to be there if you say, we will pay you on the upside. Well, if you're going to pay me only on the upside, I can make that darn thing go up, make a lot of money.
And then not worry about it afterwards.
And then I'll just pocket the money, and when it collapses, I'll wait till it gets to the bottom.
And then I'll crank it up again.
I'll crank it up again, and I'll make it go up, but I'll start earning money from the bottom, you see.
Yeah, that's not real smart.
And pulling 20%.
It's smart for the hedge fund manager.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know how smart hedge fund managers are. By the way, for whatever it's worth, last year and so far year to date, the average hedge fund has underperformed the market.
Yes, significantly underperformed the market.
Which is what I would expect at this point. Yeah. Because what happened is they took all the insider traders and the Ponzi fund guys and put them in jail.
All right. Well, I've got a complete shift in subject matter.
Do we want to do commercials before
Yeah, let's do that. We'll talk about energy after the break.
So, after the break.
Yes.
Okay, and I got the CD working, or the DVD working. Again,
so you claim.
We'll see.
We'll see.
It seems to be, it's working now. Okay.
Okay.
So we'll see. Anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and we'll be back on the other side with more of this excitingly boring
subject.
Conversation.
Yes. The dreary science.
From the Personal
Wealth Coach. We'll be very dreary about
it. We'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, and I did manage to get the music working again.
It did, yes. Yeah, the cats dancing on snare drums, squalling away in their bagpipe sounding way.
Yeah, they were. I needed to feed them.
Ah,
and you know, I fed them some good cat food, and they jumped up and they got really excited about the whole thing and took off.
All right. So to energy.
Telephone numbers?
Oh, yeah.
Telephone
well, he can do that, too. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is the Personal Wealth Coach, just in case you were wondering what you were listening to. And the telephone number's in here, 1400 or?
1-866-597-1400.
And we're live and in living sound.
We're back. Yes, you could
try.
Well,
I don't know.
We have color, but they can't see it.
Well, that's presuming that you understand that today is May 18th. If it's not May 18th,
it could be a rerun.
Then you're listening to a rerun. But if it is May 18th, and you need to consult your calendar prior to investing.
And if you don't know what day it is, then you should consult your calendar anyway.
Well, give us a call.
Yes.
773-1400 or?
1-866-597-1400.
Now we're starting to sound like PBS.
All right. Two major events happened in the energy market in the United States.
The sun rose in the east.
That was a major event. I'll call that a three major events.
Okay, right. All right. The sun continued to burn.
There's a fusion reaction happening in our solar system.
Mm-hmm.
A major fusion reaction.
I got to watch it last week going on.
The fusion reaction?
Yes.
Did it give you a burn?
No.
I've gotten a fusion burn before,
right, but I
from
actually,
staying on the
there
beach.
There are solar telescopes, and some folks had some solar telescopes.
Oh, cool.
And you can
major X-class flares happened last week.
You were
week.
Looking at the sun. You could see these big things growing.
Those, you got to see it at a great time. The two major events that I'm talking about, besides the sun actually burning in its place, one is that BP sold a refinery to Tesoro.
Which sounds a little bit like something from the Roadrunner. Beep beep.
Yeah, or what? Beep beep.
Beep beep.
Beep beep.
Beep beep.
Yes.
To who? Who this?
Tesoro.
To whom?
Tesoro. And
what is Soro?
Tesoro.
What is Tesoro?
It is a big refining company.
Which is why they bought a refinery. I
right.
like that. Why is that a big thing?
It's a big thing because. One of the requirements in purchasing this is in California, is that they upgrade the refinery. California is requiring a refinery to be upgraded. Now, this doesn't sound like that big a deal. He's like, okay.
Meaning safety no upgrade deal. Or actually produce more stuff?
Production upgrades.
Whoa.
California has limited upgrades on refineries, has actively gone in and stopped it on many occasions. Because they're afraid that some bad thing is going to happen to the environment, when the reality is the less upgrade you have, the more environmental catastrophes could happen. So they're requiring Tesoro to upgrade this plant. Also,
under Jerry Brown.
Yes.
Who, incidentally, has cut the budget dramatically.
Yes. So in the middle of all of this, California is the only state that requires the type of gasoline that it requires. It's this very...
Well, with good cause.
Yeah.
Because they got heavy smog there.
Yes, they do. It's a low-carbon type of gas, but it's much more expensive to make, and it's much more expensive to buy. They're, besides Hawaii, the most expensive state for gasoline. And Hawaii is because they don't drill for oil there, and you have to ship
they
it to them.
They don't drill for oil in the volcanoes?
They try. You know, occasionally they've tried, but it's just a little warm.
Oh, okay.
So California is requiring Tesoro upgrade this plant, this big refinery, which is going to cost some money, but it is also going to raise the capacity for refining in the whole country. And it's a shift more than the one plant.
And this is a fascinating philosophical meaning to that.
What's that?
In history. For those of you out there who, some of you who are locked in your political opinions, whatever they may be, you
yeah.
may want to turn your radio off right now because
right.
I'm about to make you angry.
If you don't have an open mind, you might get angry
yes,
in a
yes.
moment.
Your mind might explode because it's not open. Throughout history, the Democrats and the Republicans have consistently traded places.
Yeah.
And to give you an example, if you go back and research the 50s and 60s, early 60s, the Democrats were the conservatives, and the Republicans were the liberals.
Yes,
okay?
And if you think Abraham Lincoln founded the Republican Party by saying states' rights were less important than federal rights.
Right. So, and we've sifted back and forth and back and forth. And everyone, you know, basically, Texas has always been a relatively conservative state and used to be wall-to-wall Democrats. Now we're wall-to-wall Republicans. That should give you a hint.
Yes. Andrew Jackson founded the Democratic Party by saying states' rights are more important than federal rights.
Andrew Jackson and Rand Paul have approximately the same philosophy.
Isolationist.
It's an amazingly...
Don't feed the poor.
Yeah. And Andy Jackson shut down the equivalent of the Federal Reserve and created a major depression and a war, but that's neither here nor there. Okay.
Right. Okay.
Now, where was I?
You were saying that we were switching back and forth.
Oh, yeah.
The philosophical thing about
California. There's an excellent article. I think it's in I think it's in Bloomberg Business Week. It was a cover article, and I can't remember. I read The Economist and Bloomberg Business Week approximately the same time, so I get them mixed up. But the strange thing is, if you actually look at what Governor Brown has done in California, you would swear he was a right-wing Republican. He's cut the budget dramatically. He has pushed for and gotten a redistricting of the entire state, and what he did is he took it out of the hands. He got the legislature somehow to support him in doing this. Took it out of the hands of the legislature and gave it to a committee that had four Democrats, four Republicans, four independents, and the requirement to leave communities as much as possible together while obeying the law about equal voting rights.
Right.
As a result, 26% of the legislatures in the state of California, both at the federal and local level, lost their jobs in the last election. Now Andy, he didn't. I'm sorry, he didn't push that through. It was his predecessor,
Schwarzenegger,
who pushed it through. But the point is, now we have a legislature that where the members of the legislature actually are representing both Democrats and Republicans.
Right.
And as a result, they're aware of the fact that they've got to be a little balanced about this thing. But in the process, he stepped in and, no uncertain terms, cut the budget. He told them, cut the budget. I will veto it isn't cut.
If it didn't, it would go bankrupt.
You could say, well, you could say that about the United States, too.
It's true. It's true.
Because we see this great long-term issue coming, even though the news right now is the deficit is falling.
Yeah, it is.
Dramatically.
Sequestration.
Not just sequestration.
We're also getting higher revenue than we expected.
We're getting higher revenue because a lot of people made a lot of trades at the end of last year thinking capital gains were going to go up.
Right.
But the big issue, right, you're probably aware of this, General Motors, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac are all paying back the government
billions
and billions of dollars.
Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac just broke all previous records for one quarter profit.
But my point is, if you look at what is actually occurring beneath the surface in politics, and I go, you're going to think this is nuts, it's the Democrats who probably will wind up cutting the budget.
Well, it's kind of interesting because while the Republicans can be wanting it for a long time, it takes the party in power to make the big decisions. This is why, for instance, Bill Clinton is the one that signed NAFTA into law, which is a Republican platform of free trade. Ronald Reagan increased the size of government.
Which they promptly turned against as soon as a Democrat endorsed it.
Right. Well, yeah, exactly. And if you go back to, for instance, and you thought you were going to upset people, the original healthcare plan, Ronald Reagan is the one that said we needed to do this.
Ronald Reagan designed it. You had a Republican governor implement it, and then a Democrat finally got it through.
Right. So when you look at it that way,
immediately turned against it.
So that was a big philosophical statement. I'm going to go back to energy real quick as another major event. And by this, I mean a doubling in the capacity of the United States in one day. How's that for you?
Cool.
Yeah, are you even aware of this? Most people were completely unaware.
Capacity of the United States.
Export capacity for natural gas was
doubled
in one day this week.
Because the president said something?
No, because the energy agency, energy department authorized a second U.S. terminal for exporting liquid natural gas.
Right, that's what I meant. The president authorized it. The Department of Energy
This is something that to me was a little bit shocking. We only had one export facility, one in the country, for something that, well, it's not that big a deal when you think about it in one sense.
Do you know we still cannot export crude oil by law?
Yeah. Yes, I knew that.
Because the law prohibits it.
Right, and which is another big reason why I brought up that refining capacity, because our refining capacity is quite next to its maximum.
Right.
So in 2006.
And this is important. The thing about the natural gas you said is important, because the price of natural gas in Europe.
Right. It is through the
roof. Three times what it is in the United States. We could make a huge profit by exporting natural gas to Europe.
And this is interesting. One action this week now puts us at the number one nation in the world for exporting natural gas. We just took the crown from Russia because till this week,
we get it online.
Well, it's already online. People are already pumping it into the tankers. They're already moving out. There's pictures of the tankers lined up in Houston.
And the point is that it will enable Europe to cut the ties with Russia.
Exactly.
It's a blow to Russia's economy.
And if you look at what's going on, this is something fascinating. Most of people are like, oh, Russia's upset over some spy issue over there. No, Russia is upset. The reason why they released the name of the CIA chief in Moscow was because we just opened up another export facility for natural gas.
Russia has dominated European policy.
Because they can shut off the gas.
And in the wintertime, the Europeans, trying to be good folks, they decided we're not going to burn coal anymore to generate electricity. We're going to go to nuclear power. And they said, whoops, don't want to go to nuclear power.
Japan had a bad problem with that. We're not doing that anymore.
So the next best thing, let's use natural gas. Well, Russia's got a lot of that. And Russia, they're friendly people.
Yes.
They want peace.
They have, in the past decade, shut off the natural gas on multiple occasions. I think five different times in 10 years. They've just turned it off. Can you imagine in the United States being in a large city in the cold of winter, and because of a political dispute, you're cold all winter? That's what Russia has the ability to do right now. So, yes, they're a little bit peeved at us for opening up. Yes. And the other side of this is that our production in natural gas, obviously, people talk about this, has gone way up, but they haven't. I think the recognition of how much it's gone up. In 2006, that's not that long ago, 7 years ago, we produced 1 trillion cubic feet of liquid natural gas. That's a lot of natural gas. That puts us up there in the top 5 producers. In 2011, which is nowhere near the capacity that we have now, we produced 7.8 trillion. So that's
only 7.8 times in 5 years.
In 5 years. And now 15. We're close to double that.
15 times in 6 years.
Yes. So what we're talking about here is
the number of Elvis impersonators.
Yes, exactly. If that keeps going, all that the United States will produce in even its accounting offices, if this trend continues, will be natural gas.
Well, I think there's a lot of that. It's because of what's going on
full
in Washington.
There's a lot of
natural gas being produced in Washington.
The methane levels.
That is natural gas.
Yes,
it's methane. So.
Full of hot air, for sure.
Yeah.
And anyway, that two major events that have had little to no coverage.
That's because they're...
Because the IRS scandals are going on, and because Benghazi scandal is going on.
It's a lot more fun to attack the president if he's not in your party.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, particularly in cases where he did something or was associated with people that did something very wrong.
Yeah.
But there are still events that are going on. We had a caller earlier this hour that was asking if our economy was really as strong as the stock market is making it out to be.
It's actually getting a lot stronger.
There are signs all over the place.
I saw one the other day.
Yes, I saw a stop sign on the way here.
Right. It said road work ahead.
It does work ahead. I'm glad. There are places where it doesn't work ahead.
Yes. Well, and then the protest signs at the end of that little stretch of highway, the protest signs said end road work. Right.
Well, the ability for the United States to hit one of the Republican agenda points is very clearly possible. We could become energy independent
we
very
are
soon.
The
We're already net exporters of gasoline.
Did you hear the question? It was a conference in Switzerland where the it was an energy conference. Europeans and Americans and the Arabs all got together. And
sounds like a lot of hot air.
And they were discussing energy and energy policy, and the oil minister of Saudi Arabia.
They have a minister of oil?
Absolutely. they do. It is the second most powerful, other than the
I am
king.
The minister of oil.
Let me tell
what
you.
What are you? I am the minister of chickens.
Well, now the minister of oil in Saudi
commodity
Arabia
ministers.
Is the second most powerful person after the king.
Yes.
With obvious right. reasons. For, that's where their money
yeah,
comes
that's
from.
Where all the money is.
And they, he was asked the question, you know, the recent International Energy Organization projection that that the United States will surpass Saudi Arabia in petroleum production. That's raw petroleum
right.
production out of the ground within 10 years.
No big shock because.
And he said, oh, that's no, we have a global market. How is Saudi Arabia? Oh, which global, the market. But the bottom line to it is, if we can get the laws out of the way that prohibit us exporting,
yeah.
which is what in essence just happened.
Right. There's a first step in the natural gas there. Now we're going to need to do it mm-hmm. with crude oil.
We, because of the advances in technology that we have created to do the fracking, we can get this phenomenal quantity of shale oil out of the ground and shale gas. A few years ago, I remember mentioning this on the show. The program.
The program,
yes.
We're not showing anything, we're talking.
That we had, underneath the United States of America, were the largest petroleum reserves on the planet. As a matter of fact, a majority of all the petroleum reserves on the planet were inside the boundaries of the United States of America. It's just at the point they said it was just not profitable. There's no way they could get it out of the
right.
ground.
Well, now it's profitable. They've
now
done
we can get
that.
It out of the ground.
They've
yeah.
done the work to that initial work to figure out how to do it. That was a big expense.
And your brother had something to do with it.
Yes, yes. My younger brother helped design some of the software that helped them do this. And basically, there's a couple of steps that have to happen. One, we have to recognize that we need to export crude oil, because otherwise either that or we need to increase our refining capacity.
It's true.
Because right now we don't have enough capacity to refine all the oil that we drill. And if you go, for instance, if you go to Bermuda, if you go to the Virgin Isles, you're going to see something that is a little bit shocking. There are refineries being built there. Because the drilling in the Gulf has a choice. They're in international water now. They don't have to follow the law of not exporting the crude. So a lot of the big companies that are drilling in the Gulf and mm-hmm. offshore are taking it to these offshore refining facilities, because the countries are very happy to have the refinery built there and the money being created there.
Well, it's not the Virgin Islands so much. It is. It's in the Caribbean.
Yeah, well, the Caribbean. The Virgin Isles, the British Virgin Isles and Bermuda and
I was amazed
the Grand Caymans.
Right, I was amazed
the refining
size
capacity.
On Aruba, which you think of as a little tourist destination down off the coast of Venezuela, which was sung about in the the Beach Boys sang about it.
Yes.
It's huge. Huge. Refinery that could literally be seen from any place on the island.
Yeah, so worth multiples of billions of dollars, these refineries that are being built in places that are just way out of stretch. Do we have more commercials to play this hour?
We have another minute and a half of commercials.
Let's get those out of the way and we can come back.
We're going to play those. And you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And if you'd like to call us on the backside, we'll have a couple of minutes to answer questions. 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
We'll be back. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Boy, even at a different rhythm, we got that done. That's pretty cool. Anyway, we've got about another 5 minutes left in the show. 4 minutes, 3 minutes, something like that.
No, this hour of the show.
In this hour. Yeah, in the first hour.
Of the episode,
but
rather than a show.
We're going to do deja vu all over again in the second one, aren't we?
We are?
I don't know.
Is this going to be a repeat of the first hour?
Well, it'll be a repeat. It'll be another hour.
It'll be us talking.
It'll be the same minutes.
Well,
anyway.
I think it'll be different.
Telephone meeting. Numbers in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400. Do you have something you wanted to talk about?
I only live 1 hour at a time.
1 hour at a time.
Yeah.
These are the days of our lives.
General Motors is paying back about $450 million to the Treasury.
Wait a minute, million?
Million, $450 million. They just a little payment they're making. Just a $500 million. No,
it's
half a billion here, half a billion there. Pretty soon you've got some real money. Another thing that I don't feel good about, because I know a lot of people are suffering a lot of pain, but it goes with the stock market returning to normal. Gold is on its way, apparently, back to a more normal value. It has continued to fall in price rather dramatically, and a couple of folks, analysts, are saying that they expected to see gold down around $1,000 in the not-very-distant future. Who knows? But that's one of the things that is happening right now.
Right.
And we have a caller on 866-597-1400. You're on the air with the Personal Wealth Coach. Go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. I was just driving along, and I heard your commentary on the natural gas exporting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're kind of full of that.
I follow that pretty closely, and I thought there was only one terminal really ready for exporting. That's in Sabine Pass, Texas. Where's the second terminal at?
There's the first one for liquid natural gas that we're talking about here was in Shreveport. The second one is in Freeport near Houston.
Okay.
No, we're not talking about natural gas.
What's the difference between that one and the one in Sabine Pass?
Right, that's natural gas. That's not the liquefied form.
Ah, okay.
See, natural gas is, you can put it under pressure and you can put a lot of it in a tank, but there's some question about how it is not particularly efficient to transport it that way. Now, you get it super, you cool natural gas down to super cooled levels, and you make it into a liquid and you put it in a big
tanker,
very highly insulated tank that looks like a gigantic beach ball sitting in a tanker. It looks like a tanker's pregnant or something, and typically the tankers have a couple of those. It takes special ships, and you can transport a lot of that stuff somewhere.
Yeah,
and it's not under as much pressure. You just have to keep it cold, and it is a very efficient way.
It's expensive to get it there, but it's less expensive than transporting less of it.
Once you get the plant up and running, including, and we're going to get esoteric here, the amortization of capital costs. We can ship liquefied natural gas about the same price as going through a pipeline.
Yeah, and we're out of time, so thanks for the call. We'll be back next hour with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. In the meantime, if you'd like to contact us off the air, you can reach us at 947-1111. There's voicemail there, or you can reach us at 800-914-PLAN. Or you can email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. And until next hour, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
Yeah, that's what he said.
Truth. It's not just a word on your Fox News station. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.